Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Pelser, chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto. This is a podcast about caves and the people who explore them. If that sounds interesting to you, you're in luck. There are groups all over the country called Grottos of the National Speleological Society that can guide you on your first trip, show you the ropes, so to speak, and educate you on safe practices. Caving can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing, and there are rules that we always follow to ensure a safe trip. Always wear a helmet, bring three reliable sources of light with backup batteries, bring the map, never cave alone, watch the weather, etc. All important rules that must be followed for safety's sake. If you want to go caving, find your local grotto, talk to people, make some friends. Do it the right way. If you saw the length of this month's episode and you thought, this has to be an April Fool's joke, I am sorry to say that it's not, but I hope you'll enjoy what I've got for you this month anyway. If you know the caving world even just a little bit, you've probably heard or read the name Bill Halliday at some point. What I have for you this month is a lot different from what you've heard on the podcast before. More on that in a minute. First, I want to thank our sponsor, Organic Robot, on Etsy. High-quality shirts with great designs to show off your love of the outdoors. And yes, caving. Charlie is a board member of our grotto, the CIG, and you can see him with his shirts at select caving events throughout the country. He was at CIRA, OTR, Indiana Cave Capers, and other events last year. But you don't have to wait until those events to check out what he's got. You can search for Organic Robot, all one word, then click the Etsy link. Most of his designs are available on innovative moisture-wicking fabrics. He hooked me up with a couple shirts recently, and I always love the designs, but I was impressed by the fabrics he's finding, too. A couple of them looked and felt soft, you know, like cotton, but they were a synthetic blend. Very cool. Literally. Search Organic Robot, click the Etsy link. Mention the Caving Podcast at checkout, and he'll include a Caving Podcast sticker. And speaking of Charlie, he's going to be selling shirts at Spring MVOR, which is April 20th through the 22nd. A great weekend of caving and a great free howdy party Friday night with pulled pork and live music. Get that Saturday night banquet for an extra $15, your choice of a 20-ounce pork steak or a quarter chicken. I'd get that pork steak. You bring your canoes or kayaks. There's a river right there. It's at Indian Springs Family Resort in Steeleville, Missouri. Registration is by snail mail, which you got to get to them by April 10th, so drop those in the mail now. You can get that at mvor.caves.org. mvor.caves.org. And you can directly support the podcast, of course, by contributing on Patreon. This podcast is a lot of work. I love doing it, and I love hearing from listeners, but it is a time commitment. So if you appreciate the podcast and you're in a position to throw a few bucks my way, you can do that at patreon.com/cavingpodcast. All of that money will go right back into caving in the form of conservancy memberships and donations to caving organizations. I know how many people listen to this podcast, so if everyone listening right now, and I know it won't happen, but if it did, if everyone listening gave just a dollar, that'd give me $1,000, probably more than that. And I would throw that right back into caving conservation. A sad note before we get to this month's interview. This past week, I learned that longtime Indiana caver, Joe Oliphant passed away. He was a guy who was known to go where nobody else wanted to go, one of the hardiest cavers. He went to the toughest caves, ones that are hard to get to, and then hard to get through, of course, once you got there. He was an Indiana caver to start with, and caving took him all over the world, including Turkey, where he's been living for quite a while now. He's been mentioned on this podcast a few times by various guests, and while I never got to meet him, being an Indiana caver, his name's come up a lot over the years among my friends in the CIG and elsewhere. So on behalf of the Caving Podcast community, my condolences to anybody who called Joe a good friend, and of course to his wife, Tina. Okay, Bill Halliday. This month's episode is taken from a video recording made at a recent Nashville Grotto meeting, the last Nashville Grotto meeting that Bill was able to attend before moving in with his daughter for long-term care. He's 91 years old. He'll be 92 next month, and he has done so much for caving throughout his long life, and he's one of the few people still alive with a three-digit NSS number. He's a retired physician. He's written or edited many caving-related books and articles. This man's done a lot, and I wish I could sit down with him and do a full interview, but I'm thankful to have this. This is just a brief sharing of experiences and insights from a guy who has literally dedicated decades of his life to caving. I will say he shares a few things about the structure of the national organization later in the talk. And so I have to disclaim that his views don't necessarily reflect the views of this podcast. But that's why I do the podcast, so everyone can express their views. And I especially suggest that the opinions of someone of his stature and experience be listened to and heeded to whatever extent is reasonable. It's a challenging time for the NSS, and constructive criticism and ideas are welcome and encouraged, especially from someone who's been with the organization almost since the beginning, like he has. Okay, here's a quickie from caving legend Bill Halliday.
I first came to Nashville on a whirlwind tour of the Eastern United States in 1957. And I was honored to have a very nice look at Cumberland Caverns with Roy Davis in those days. And Ed Yarbrough. Is Ed here tonight?
Right here.
Hey.
There.
Good to see you, Warren.
Good to see you.
And when I got here in 1985, Chicago not only had weekend trips, but I was delighted to find that they had Wednesday night trips. I really enjoyed going with the Grotto to Vaughn's Gap Cave, Parachute Cave. They weren't very big caves, as you all know, but in those caves, I found signatures, historic signatures. Roy Davis, 1951. Nashville Grotto has had its ups and downs, as we all have, but over the years, it's been one of the outstanding grottos of the NSS. As I said, I'm very pleased to have had a small part in it in the last 30-some years. I was not a charter member of the NSS, although some people have written me up as such. I joined in 1947, as I said. I had had trouble finding the NSS. I had been caving in Virginia. I was a counselor at Camp Wallowatulo for boys at Melboro Springs. The camp electrician was a Mr. Clark, whose family had owned Clark's Cave since the 1700s. And he invited a bunch of us over, and I was hooked. But he didn't know how to contact the NSS. They had contacted him in the past, and I had to wait until an article appeared in the Safeway Stores magazine, Family Circle. And I gave the NSS address, 510 Star Building, Washington, D.C. I immediately got in touch with them and found a fascinating group of cave explorers, cave scientists from the U.S. museums downtown in Washington, D.C. This all began with a Sunday school outing club of a Unitarian Church in Washington, D.C. They went to visit one of the local caves, and several of their members were fascinated. They formed what they called the Speleological Society of the District of Columbia. And that appeared on the cover of what is recognized now as the first issue of the NSS Bulletin. You can pass that around. This is a reprint. I've got an original, but it's not in the world's best condition. I don't think it would have taken to handling. By the time a year had passed, they realized they were onto a very important idea and started thinking nationally from the very beginning. And the second issue of the NSS Bulletin, clear back in 1941, carried the National Speleological Society.
50 cents per copy.
Yeah. And one thing led to another. Bill Stevenson was the real founder, although he had NSS member number three. His wife Merle was NSS member number one.
Who was number two?
Number two was somebody else who wanted to disband the NSS during the war. Nobody remembers his name anymore. I first came to Nashville in 1957 in the middle of a thunderstorm. The water was running down the gutters and onto the sidewalks, and I never dreamed that I would be coming here for 30-some years. But my daughter, I wanted to be an engineer, and not many schools were taking girls in engineering courses in the 1970s, I guess it was. So I started having ties then that led to where I am now. My home is Seattle. My family moved from Atlanta to Seattle in November 1927. So I don't remember very much about the South at that time, but I did maintain ties with the South because my mother was from South Carolina. Bill Stevenson had his faults, like we all do, but he had a vision, and he carried through with it to see the National Society. And when he found out that I was going back west when I finished medical school, he specifically gave me the assignment of spreading the gospel of the NSS in the West. In 1948, there was a grotto in Indiana, and several grottos in the Virginias and New England and so on, but there was none west of Indiana. So I interned in Pasadena and called for people to come together and form a Southern California grotto. And they did. Some really distinguished people were at that first meeting, including Denny Constantine, the great bat expert. After 2 years there, I moved on to Seattle, which was home for a year, and set up the Cascade Grotto. It had more than its share of difficulties, and for a time went obsolete. In those days, there were no roads into the mountains where the caves were, and they were just starting to find lava tube caves when the group lost its enthusiasm and had to be restarted. Actually, it was by a non-NSS caver who found the caves on Cave Ridge, 60 miles east of Seattle, in an isolated block of marble. And they're still pushing them deeper. After something like 80 years, they're down to maybe 800 feet up there. Then I moved on to Denver, and George Moore had just come to Denver. And John Thrailkill, an early Colorado caver, came into the NSS. And he became a professor of geology. So this Colorado grotto was off to a great start. And I moved on to Salt Lake City, which is a major part of my life, over the next 5 years. The Wasatch Range had limestone caves in it, including Death Canyon Cave, which was the deepest in the United States at that time. And out in the desert, there were some amazing caves with amazing crystalline formations and helictites in them. Dale Green became my sidekick, and we explored everywhere within a 5-hour drive from Salt Lake City. I was almost finished with my surgical training in Salt Lake when the Navy decided they wanted to recall me to active duty. I'd been in the reserves to be the ship medical officer on a small carrier. And that took me out into the Far East, and most especially Okinawa. And in Okinawa, I found a totally different type of stream that was shaped more like lava tube caves than anything I'd seen anywhere else. In 1957, I finished my training, went back to Seattle to set up my practice, made the big tour of the United States that I was speaking of. The years passed, and eventually I started going to Hawaii to specifically study the lava tube caves, especially in the caldera of Kilauea Volcano. And I was able to get a Hawaii grotto started. It too has had its problems because the Hawaii Speleological Survey has done a fantastic job mapping and studying a couple of thousand lava tube caves. They didn't need me after a while. Through the lava tube caves, I got active in international caving and got to some amazing places. I'm not going to try to enumerate any of them tonight, because it might interfere with the program. Once you turn me on, it's hard to turn me off. If I'm taking too long, turn me off. I regret very much the condition I am in. I'm essentially blind from glaucoma. I can't, if I write something down, I can't read it. And as you can tell, I can't hear worth a damn, but it's been a fascinating life. The NSS right now is facing a financial disaster. I think everybody ought to be made aware of it. The National Grotto might be in a position to help much more than most other grottos. I guess we've got about 200 grottos now, but Nashville is still a standout, especially because Gary Schindel in Texas, who was a graduate of the Nashville Grotto, still thinks fondly of us. What happened was that a reorganization of the NSS in 1956 set it up so that it has a president and four vice presidents, but the president has no authority beyond that of the vice presidents. Essentially, we have five presidents, and officers meeting several times a year are devoted largely towards squabbling, fighting over money for each officer's divisions. There are lots of excellent programs that have been developed by the NSS and funded through the NSS. But with the officers fighting for the money in the divisions, what has happened is that when two projects are about equally meritorious, they go ahead and fund both of them, whether there's money for it or not. And as you may have noticed, and us life members didn't notice, the dues have gone up to $50 a year now, which is much more than the young people can afford. Even graduate students can't afford $50 a year, and the membership has been dropping off every year, 100, 200. That cuts down the revenue that comes in from dues, so they have to raise the dues. That cuts down the membership even more, and it is a vicious spiral in which the NSS finds itself now. I have been on the NSS board for something like 52 of the 70 years I've been a member, and I've seen it firsthand. What is badly needed is an administrative reorganization of the NSS to give the president some power to exert fiscal discipline. In addition to the infighting in the officers' meeting, there is no attempt to make various projects stay within budget. The conservation and restoration manual is a particularly bad example of that. My understanding is that its final cost was something like five times the amount that the board authorized it to have. And instead of making the people who wrote it and supported it, rather than making them ante up the extra money, the board just went ahead and approved it to avoid controversy, even though we couldn't afford it. I think we very badly need a strong president of the NSS who can exert fiscal discipline. Otherwise, I have no idea how this spiral is going to occur. I hope the Grotto will take a real hard look at this problem. It's not going to be solved at the level of the NSS board. Power is never given up willingly. And I suggest that the Grotto study the problem and prepare a strong resolution to be presented at the Congress of Grottos at the Missoula Convention coming up this year. And prepare the way for it through Gary Schindel. I think this is extremely important, or pretty soon the NSS is going to be constituted entirely of us old buzzards who bought life memberships when they were cheap. And
this is Ed Yarbrough speaking.
The society is the young people, and they're being squeezed out of it. We've got to do something about it. If there's anything else you'd like me to say a few words on, come tell me about it. Otherwise, I'll shut up.
Has anyone got
Can I tell two short Bill Halliday stories? Phil, can you hear me?
Just barely.
Speak into the mic.
All right. You got it?
Got it.
Well, in 1962, when I was 18 years old, I was involved in an accident up in Cookeville where Nick Crawford, some of you know Nick, fell in Thunder Hole and suffered a compression fracture of his back and some other pretty serious injuries, and we had to haul him out and take him to the hospital. And when I got back to Cumberland Caverns, where I worked during the summer, Tank Doran had me describe that accident into one of these old reel-to-reel tape recorders. I think it was a Sony, probably one of the first ones to come out. And Tank played that for Bill Halliday, and Bill put me in his book, Depths of the Earth, that came out in 1966. And when you're 18, being mentioned in a book is a big deal. So I always admired Dr. Halliday for being a great author.
Did that book have a picture of you with a gypsum lips and coverlet?
Yes, I believe it is. There's a picture of me in Cumberland Caverns looking at the gypsum lips, and I never knew it was me. My mother was looking at the book one time and realized it was me. The other thing, real quick, of course, I got to know Bill after that and caved with him when I could. But when I got back from Vietnam, I got interested in black and white photography, and I took several pictures in the early 70s that Bill wanted to put in his new book, American Caves and Caving. And so when the book first came out in 1974, he called and said he was in town and wanted to give me a copy. And so we met at Ireland's, right across the street from Vanderbilt Law School, and had lunch. And he gave me the book. And I was so young and impetuous, I didn't open it to realize that he had signed it with extreme thanks. And it was his birthday. It was his 48th birthday. And he had put that in the front of this book. So I'm going to ask him to sign it again now that he's 91. I'm 41 years later, or 44, whatever it is. But Bill is a legend in the NSS. And we've been really fortunate here in Nashville to have him for all these years. And he's an honorary member of our grotto. And in my book, one of the greatest cavers in America.
Okay, thanks, Ed. I give you a report.
Bill, can you say something more about the very beginning of the NSS with Bill Stevenson and how even the Bill Stevenson thing came together? And also, is it true that Tank Gorin was hitchhiking during the war and Bill Stevenson picked him up with a car full of cavers and said, "You want to go with us tonight?" And that was the beginning of Tank Gorin in caving?
I hate to say this, something I don't know.
Tank never told me that story. I tend to doubt it. Tank picked up caving when he was at the University of Virginia.
But he told me that on his porch up there.
He told you that?
Yeah. However, no one else ever heard.
Nobody else ever heard.
Yeah.
Well, you're a source close to the White House.
Well, I wasn't around at the beginning of the NSS, so there's not much that I can say in addition to what I said before. It started out as a Sunday school outing club. It became the Speleological Society of the District of Columbia, and it developed dreams of being national, and I am honored to have been a part in spreading it throughout the West. Is that satisfactory?
Yep.
Does anyone else have anything?
Ask me about Bill Cuddington, because I know there's some pictures in American Caves and Caving of Bill Cuddington.
This crazy kid, Bill Cuddington, started rappelling in caves without a safety rope. And the wise old buzzards on the NSS board, some of them were on the point of reading him out of the society because they saw it as unsafe. But I thought it had great potential. And I encouraged him in every way possible and wrote him up in the book, too. It worked out pretty good, didn't it?
If you want to know more about Bill Cuddington, we have about a 90-minute interview that was done with Bill in a studio back in 2003 when we were preparing for our 50th anniversary. And I've got a copy of it. Jody's got it on his computer. And sometime it might be fun to edit that a little bit and bring it to a meeting, because he tells a lot of that history in that interview.
And David Hughes' book is interesting, too.
Yeah, of course, there's a book about him, Vertical Bill, but hearing it in his own voice is, to me, a lot better than reading it in a book.
Well, anyhow, in about a week, I'm flying home to Seattle, and we'll be living with my daughter on the north side of the Olympic Peninsula in the thriving metropolis of Squim, which is spelled S-E-Q-U-I-M. But at the rate these problems are progressing, at the age of 91, I'll probably be going into an assisted living center close to where she lives pretty quickly.
Well, Bill, I just want to say it's been great getting to know you, what little bit that I got to know you. And it goes for like Larry and Ed and Gerald here, and a lot of these older guys. You're really inspiration to us. Younger folks, and you know, a big part of the pride of the Nashville Grotto is getting to know folks like yourself and you, Ed, and Larry, and Gerald, and I say I speak for the Grotto, but I'm really just speaking for myself, and it makes me proud to be a Nashville Grotto member, and I'll always respect and appreciate you.
Well, thanks very much. I hate to say goodbye, but it's time.
Yeah.
A caving legend, Bill Halliday, speaking at his last Nashville Grotto meeting back in March. By the way, the Nashville Grotto meets the first Thursday of every month at the REI in Brentwood, Tennessee. You can check out their blog at nashvillegrotto.org. I want to thank Ray Maslach and Ed Yarborough of the Nashville Grotto for providing me with that recording and getting permission for me to use it on the podcast. And as Ed mentioned earlier, that recording of Bill Cuttington is out there, and he's waiting to get his hands on it and some other recorded interviews with cavers so that he can send them to me, and maybe it'll be featured on a future episode of the Caving Podcast. And that brings up another point. If you know of any other recordings like this, maybe old audio or even video interviews or speeches with cavers that you think would sound cool on this podcast, please let me know. I take great pleasure in editing this content for you, and this really helps me out time-wise because it means I don't have to chase guests and book time. There's got to be other content out there that I could work for this podcast. If you know of any, please email me, alpineproductions@gmail.com. alpineproductions@gmail.com. And of course, I'm in the NSS directory. And remember, you can support the podcast directly at patreon.com/cavingpodcast or our sponsors, past and present, Swago at swagogear.com. There's still some Swagos on eBay, and Scott's posting about them on Facebook. Organic Robot on Etsy. Again, he's going to be at Spring MVOR. Or just rate and comment on iTunes. That helps me out a lot, too. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Pelser, chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto. Until next time, kill nothing but time.